Well, good evening, everyone. Thank you for showing up on such a beautiful, beautiful evening. I think it's an ice cream evening. Doesn't it feel like that? An ice cream evening. And doesn't ice cream bring joy? And that's what I'd like to talk about, actually, tonight is joy. As we all know, dukkha, or suffering, discontent, it's translated different ways, but the Sanskrit word is dukkha, plays really a central role in the Buddha's teachings. In fact, in the Buddha's very first sermon at Deer Park, he said, "I teach one thing and only one thing, suffering and the end of suffering." And then he expounded on what we call the Four Noble Truths. The existence of dukkha, or suffering, the cause of suffering, the end, end of suffering, and then the path of how to achieve that end of suffering. So that was the beginning of the Buddha's teachings, but far from the whole of the Buddha's teachings, which it's important for us to remember. The contemporary Vietnamese Zen teacher Thich Nhat Hanh writes in his wonderful book, Being Peace, "Suffering is not enough." I'll quote him. "Life is filled with suffering, but it is also filled with many wonders. Like the blue sky, the sunshine, the eyes of a baby. To suffer is not enough. We must also be in touch with the wonders of life. They are within us and all around us, everywhere, anytime." I think to be touched by the wonders of life is to be touched by joy. The Buddhist tradition teaches that we can, with practice, cultivate states of mind, wholesome states of mind, rather than be pushed and pulled by our feelings and emotions, as if we were helplessly buffeted about in a turbulent sea. Often our first reaction when afflictive emotions sweep over us is to try and change the sea, or at least to blame it for the painful sensations and reactions that arise in our hearts and minds. And we all know how successful that is, right? The Buddhist tradition offers us practices that help each of us foster and cultivate thoughts and feelings that connect, that nurture, and respond to the painful feelings rather than to react. So tonight, I would like us to reflect on a small part of the Tenzo Kyokun, instructions to the head cook. I'll talk about that in just a moment here, but Kate and I have often talked on this text, I think quite a number of times, really. And it's one of my favorite texts or pieces of writing by Dogen, the 13th century founder of Soto Zen in Japan. So at any rate, in this piece of writing, The Instructions to the Head Cook, Dogen describes three states or attitudes of mind that the head cook, or the tenzo, should cultivate while working in the kitchen. And by inference, all monastic officials should cultivate these same attitudes as they carry out their duties. And these attitudes are translated as joyful mind, nurturing mind, or parental mind, or sometimes it's called grandmotherly mind. And the third is great mind, or magnanimous mind. Now, discussing in any kind of detail these three attitudes of the Tenzo Kyokun will take more time than we have tonight. So I'd like to focus, as I started off with, joy. It's a joyful mind that Dogen talks about. even though the Deer Park sermon started off by talking about suffering, from the very beginnings of Buddhist teachings, the value and necessity of joy as a spiritual practice, a spiritual quality, has been taught and encouraged. Here's a gloss of the Brahma Viharas, or divine abodes, as they're translated as, and that we are encouraged to cultivate, as found in the Digha Nikaya, one of the very earliest Buddhist texts. It goes like this. May we dwell in kindness, compassion, joy, and equanimity, pervading the entire world everywhere, and equally with our hearts filled with kindness, compassion, joy, and equanimity. Our hearts growing great, abundant, measureless, free from enmity, and free from distress. So a kind of prayer almost, right? In the Brahma Viharas, wishing for these qualities for ourselves, and then that we offer the world. And joy is one of those qualities. So joy, as understood in the Buddhist tradition, has its roots in awareness, which sensitizes us to our world of this moment. Awareness, or mindful mind, we could say, brings us into intimacy with all things. When we return to simple awareness, we make room for joy and strengthen our ability to tend to all things with a spacious heart. So the joy fostered and taught in the Buddhist tradition is not the giddy joy that may arise from a sudden surprise birthday party, or the meeting of a potential new partner, or finding a $20 bill on the sidewalk. Rather, it's the joy of being fully engaged in the present moment. So here are some thoughts on this by Thanissaru Bhikkhu, a noted translator of Pali texts, the early Buddhist texts, a scholar, and a great teacher of Theravadan Buddhism living in America. And these thoughts, I think you'll find here, he links this understanding of joy with meditation practice. Right? Here we've just done two periods of meditation. Did you feel joy doing this? Or was it like, oh, ring the bell. Will, ring the bell. Okay, let's see here what he says. So Thanissaru Bhikkhu writes, when explaining meditation, the Buddha often drew analogies with the skills of artists, carpenters, musicians, archers, and cooks. Finding the right level of effort, he said, is like a musician's tuning of a lute. Reading the mind's needs in the moment to be gladdened, steadied, or inspired is like a palace cook's ability to read and please the tastes of a prince. Collectively, these analogies make an important point. Meditation is a skill, and mastering it should be enjoyable in the same way that mastering any other rewarding skill can be. The Buddha said as much to his son, Rahula. When you see that you've acted, spoken, or thought in a skillful way, conducive to happiness, while causing no harm to yourself or others, take joy in that fact and keep on training. Take joy in your skillful ability and keep on training. The key to maintaining your inspiration in the day-to-day work of meditation practice is to approach it as play. Now that's interesting. Play. a happy opportunity to master practical skills, to raise questions, experiment, and explore. This is precisely how the Buddha himself taught meditation. Instead of formulating a cut-and-dried method, he first trained his students in the personal qualities such as honesty and patience needed to maintain trustworthy observations. Only then did he teach meditation techniques. And even then, he didn't spell everything out. He raised questions and suggested areas for explorations in hopes that his questions would capture his students' imagination so that they could develop discernment and gain insights on their own and know the joy of that. I think in these passages, we can see that Thanissaro Bhikkhu encourages us to use the joy of discovery and inquiry in our meditation practice. This joy energizes and steadies the mind. This joy gladdens, of course, the mind and heart, and releases it from its many burdens, and it deepens practice. So now let's go on. I was going to say go forward in a few centuries, but Thanissaro Bhikkhu is contemporary, although he's talking about the Theravadin tradition. But let's look at how Dogen explores joy in the Tenzo Kyokan, the instructions to the cook. And just remember that this text is Dogen addressing the head cook or the Tenzo about how he or she should conduct their activity in the kitchen. Okay, so actually, this is Dogen speaking now. Actually, when working in any position of responsibility, not only as a Tenzo, but as any officer or assistant, strive to maintain a spirit of joy, magnanimity, along with the caring attitude of a parent. A joyful spirit or a joyful mind is one of gratefulness and buoyancy. You should consider this carefully. A little bit later, he goes on, rejoice in your birth into this world, where you are capable of using your body freely to offer food to the three treasures, the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. Consider the innumerable possibilities in a timeless universe we have been given a marvelous opportunity. The merit of working as a Tenzo will never decay. My sincerest desire is that you exhaust all the strength and effort of all your lives, past, present, and future, and every moment of every day into your practice through the work of the Tenzo, so that you may form a strong connection with the Buddha Dharma. To view all things with this attitude is called joyful mind. So when Dogen is speaking here about a joyful mind, he clearly did not mean it in the sense of pretending to be happy when we're not, or pushing away negative thoughts, or letting only positive ones into our mind. In his monastery, and in Soto Zen monasteries today, daily work was and is considered just as much part of Zen life as sitting and walking in meditation and listening to Dharma talks. Dogen instructed the cook that when she was cooking, the cooking itself was practice. Not getting cooking over and done with so that everyone would be able to eat. That's not the purpose of cooking. But simply cooking for cooking's sake, so to speak. Of course, the monks and nuns need properly prepared and nourishing meals on time. The head cook or Tenzo must plan for that, but the activity of cooking, and even the activity of planning, is done for its own sake. And this is the root of joy. We can find joy in these tasks, and I would say maybe every task we can find joy, when we meet it with full attention. Because at that moment, the tasks connect us to our life. There is no need to be focused on outcomes, to feel we're rushing through mundane tasks so that we can, at some point in the indeterminate future, arrive at a more important moment in our life. Cooking is life. And so is offering the food. It's simply your life. Eating the meal is your life. Cleaning up afterwards is simply your life. In his commentary, Kosho Uchiyama Roshi, I'm using this book here called How to Cook Your Life, From the Zen Kitchen to Enlightenment. So the Tenzo Kyokun, or Instructions of the Cook, is only about 20 pages long, and then the rest of it's commentary by a Japanese Zen teacher and writer, Kosho Uchiyama, who is now deceased. And he was the teacher of Shogaku Okumura. Some of you will know that name. Okay. Yes, okay. So here's his commentary. It seems to me that to really understand Dogen Zenji's remarks on joyful mind, we have to begin by asking ourselves in just what direction our lives are heading. What are we doing? What are we trying to do with our lives? And what should we really be doing? What should we be doing with our lives? Sawaki Roshi, another great teacher and the teacher of Uchiyama Roshi. Sawaki Roshi always said that we need to learn what it means to emerge from a life which is confused, incomplete, and carelessly haphazard. A life based on compromise, on always fooling ourselves and others about who we are and about how we live. We need to learn what it means to settle naturally into our lives. To achieve a joyful mind, then, is to first become clearly aware of the significance of the function of the tenzo, of the head cook, and then to pour all your life energy into the work itself. To talk of such a spirit of joy is totally different from simply feeling happy. It has no connection with the ecstasy lovers may feel entwined in each other's arms, or the tears of joy at being converted to some new religion. Functioning as a tenzo, as the head cook, is just hard and at times painful work. There is no time to get enraptured in religious ecstasy. Yet, throwing all your passion for life into that work, that is what it means to have a joyful mind. Zen, we don't often talk about passion. Throw your passion into your work. It seems to me that joy is an antidote to the conditioning that closes our minds and hearts. Beginner's mind, or the mind of discovery and inquiry, is joy, and this joy sustains our practice. As you may have just experienced, Zazen, our meditation practice on the cushion, can include a sore back, knees. It can include returning the mind over and over and over again to the present moment and situation. It's hard at times to stay on the cushion physically and mentally, and at times challenging emotions and thoughts arise. But over the years, joy is there as well. Sometimes joy is felt as a relief from the complications of this life. We take joy in the simplicity of just sitting, noticing our breath. Sometimes in the middle of the night when my mind is gripped by a painful memory, I get up from my bed and sitting zazen, return again and again to my body and my breath. And most of the time, a quiet joy arises. Or maybe it was always there. But after sitting for a while, it rests more in the forefront of my awareness. And this is a very powerful lesson for me. I don't think I will ever be completely free of the cycles of agitated craving activity in my life. But I can pause and through zazen practice discover where enduring joy may be found. If joy cannot be found right here, in this moment, with all its imperfections, then where would it be found? After all, doesn't every moment have its own imperfections, even if it's just that this moment will not last? Unlike other spiritual teachers during his time, Buddha did not speak of transcending the world with all its challenges and difficulties, but rather, perhaps we could say, he spoke of transcending distress at its very root. So what I mean by joy isn't the same as happiness. I'd like to make a distinction here between joy and happiness that you may or you may not agree with. I think happiness arises when we seek the pleasant experience. In other words, something external. Right? The ice cream, the coffee, the music, the handsome-looking person across the bar. When I look at my own life, and perhaps this is true for your life as well, I see much of my own energy and thoughts and actions directed towards achieving pleasant experiences and avoiding the unpleasant. And I don't think there's necessarily anything wrong with this, but it is important to note how much energy is devoted to seeking happiness that can only be achieved by chasing or buying something outside. And then to ask, is this the way I want to conduct my life? Dogen emphasizes the simplicity of doing one thing at a time and doing it attentively with one's whole being. This joyful returning is only possible when we aren't reaching out to attain something. Suzuki Roshi, the Japanese monk who brought this form of practice from Japan to North America in the 60s, said this: the true practice of zazen is to sit as if drinking water when you're thirsty. Isn't that cool? There you have naturalness. It's quite natural for you to take a nap when you're very sleepy. But to take a nap just because you're lazy, as if it were the privilege of a human being to take a nap, that's not natural. You think, well, my friends, all of them are napping, why shouldn't I? But this is not naturalness. Your mind is entangled with some other idea, someone else's idea, some goal. You are not independent, not yourself, not natural. You do not have to force yourself to drink water when you're thirsty. You're glad to drink water. If you have true joy in your zazen, then that is true zazen. Well, let me stop here and ask you a question about joy. How do you understand joy in your own life? And can you cultivate joy? What are some examples? How do you understand joy in your own life? Can you cultivate joy? What are some examples?